Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. Iraq. Bedlam in Basra. The Iraqi port city of Basra was thrown into bedlam after protests against socioeconomic inequality and corruption turned violent, culminating in the torching of many government buildings and even the Iranian consulate. The Three Seas Initiative. Has Poland's moment finally arrived? The third summit of the Three Seas Initiative will take place in Bucharest next week, and although this regional framework is still in its fledgling stages, the geopolitical ambition behind the Warsaw-led structure makes one wonder whether Poland's moment has finally arrived. And also, Brazil. Assassinating democracy. Last week's stabbing of Brazilian presidential frontrunner Jair Bolsonaro, a right-wing populist who's been criticized as a fascist for his views towards social relations and the military, represented the most dramatic attempt to assassinate democracy in the country, a process that some say actually started with now-incarcerated former President Lula being ruled ineligible to run. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is the bedlam in Basra. The Iraqi port city of Basra was thrown into bedlam after protests against socioeconomic inequality and corruption turned violent, culminating in the torching of many government buildings and even the Iranian consulate. The local population has plenty of reasons to be upset, ranging from rampant unemployment to the lack of basic utilities. But these relatively commonplace problems in the global south are made all the more infuriating by the fact that southern Iraq has most of the country's oil reserves, leading to populist claims that corrupt politicians are stealing money from the people. Because of its predominant economic, military, and soft power influence in the country, some of the raging mobs were successful in scapegoating Iran as the cause of their suffering, thus leading not only to the burning of its consulate, but also to the shouting of provocative slogans against the anti-terrorist popular mobilization units that had helped Iraq form a few years ago for fighting Daesh. Hostility towards the Islamic Republic has been boiling for some time now as a political issue, especially after famous Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr's coalition came out on top in the country's elections earlier this year. The firebrand, former militia leader, recently adopted a strong stance against the PMUs and Iran, with observers remarking that he seems to be either pivoting away from Iraq's ally or at the very least trying to balance between it and Saudi Arabia. Al-Sadr, as Iraq's gray cardinal amidst the post-election parliamentary uncertainty that still prevails in the country, called on the current prime minister to resign as a result of the latest violence, which suggests that the controversial cleric is trying to exploit events for regime change purposes. The last thing that the already fractured nation of Iraq needs at this crucial crossroads is another serious political crisis, because it could easily tear its feuding people apart and provide the opportunity for Daesh or a similar terrorist to regain their lost momentum. Furthermore, the geostrategic dynamics of the overall situation are very disturbing because they suggest that Iraq is now becoming more destabilized than Syria, which could therefore pose a security crisis for Iran and add to the hybrid war pressure that the U.S. has been putting on it lately. So folks, I think while most of the world is seeing what's happening in Syria, we're kind of forgetting that right next door in Basra, in Iraq, the country seems to be imploding before the world's eyes. So for those of you that haven't been paying attention, I hope that you find this segment to be very informative. The first guest that we're going to speak to today is Mr. Isyan Devrim. He's a Shia political commentator.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Isyan, to the unaware observer, the optics of what happened in Basra looked like the beginning of a so-called Shiite civil war in Iraq between anti-Iranian al-Sadr and the pro-Iranian government, but the situation probably isn't that simple. So can you please briefly explain to us what's really happening and why?
Hello, Andrew. First, I want to thank you for your invitation. Actually, I wanted
to say more things and go into the details, which are very important. But today we should hold it short because of the time we have for your program. It's very difficult to explain it briefly, but I will try it. The reality is the Western media doesn't want to report objectively about what is happening in Iraq because they have betted with all their assets on the coalition of Haider al-Abadi, with his nationalist economy and Muqtada al-Sadr, who wants to consolidate his power in Sadr City and Baghdad with the help of tribal Arab racism, which will be supported by the House of Saud Riyadh, who are also now in a tribal competition fight, according to Madawi al-Rashid from Middle East. Actually, Muqtada al-Sadr of great Shia scholar Sayyid Muhammad Sadiq al-Sadri as the son of law of Sayyid Muhammad Bakr al-Sadr is not a racist and anti-Iranian because he lived many times in Iran and he also studied there, but he uses these political tools to save his power in Sadr City and his military movement, the Saray al-Salam. What he sees as a heritage of his family clan, but we are not really recognizing it as Islamic, what he does. The protests in Basra have started during the election and after them, when it was clear for the people of Basra, who are mainly Shia, that Haider al-Abadi has lost the elections. The first building which was set on fire was the building of Dawa Party of Haider al-Abadi and his office in July this year. The protesters also tried to storm his hotel when he visited the area, but he was already gone. The claims of corruption are directed against all Iraqi governments after Saddam, also Maliki and the United States, who are getting the oil from Basra and giving them petrodollars for that oil, which the Iraqi government buys then arms and weapons from the U.S. again to fight terrorism of ISIS, which will be supported by United States of America. So the people are seeing nothing from this money, even when it is one of the oil-richest regions in the world. The demands for civil services were always a big problem in Basra, but the people in Basra stayed always quiet and sacrificed a lot, and also their lives in the war battles against ISIS by giving soldiers to the people's mobilization units, also called Hashd al-Shaabi, and not to the Iraqi army, because they always knew that the fight against ISIS has the highest priority. The government of Abadi, which has replaced the government of Nouri al-Maliki, was an appointment by the United States and the West after Mosul has fallen to ISIS by an US-orchestrated military coup when the corrupt Iraqi army ran away and left all their weapons in Mosul. Even when Abadi and Maliki are from the same party, the Dawa party, they are not from the same political wings inside the party, which means that by the people elected, Nouri al-Maliki is always more popular than the current US-appointed Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi. The difference between Abadi and Maliki is that Maliki is a Shia hardliner who goes together with the Iranian government and the teachings of Sayyid Ali Khamenei and Sayyid Ali al-Sistani. Abadi follows more the education from the United Kingdom and the supporters from the West, who are also following the values and the culture of the West, which doesn't impress the people of Iraq and especially not the people of Basra. Abadi will also blackmail by treated by the United States with the threat of comeback of ISIS and the independence of Iraqi Kurdistan, which means the United States would support both of these options if Abadi doesn't do what the United States demands from him.
You know, the international media has made a big deal about some of the protesters' supposed anti-Iranian slogans and the actions and everything else. So do you think that the people really are blaming Iran for their problems, or is Iran just being the scapegoat here?
That's international. In the fact, Western media made a big deal about the torturing of Iranian consulate is understandable. It provided exactly the picture that the West needed for the government foreign process, which is still going on. In such a situation, the West would have an easy play to form its puppet regime in Iraq under the government of Haider al-Abadi. So I think that even when we had real and honest protest against Abadi and his lack of basic civil service to Basra, we had also some intelligence service from the United States, Saudistan, Kuwait, and on the streets of Basra, who tried to sabotage the demonstrations to make them to violent riots and to disqualify them, while showing the world that the people are actually supporting the Western-controlled Abadi regime and not Shia of Iraq and Iran. The argument that Iran is doing bad things to Iraqis has always been the argument of the Ba'ath Party of Sunni fascist Saddam, who has supported the Saudis and the United States. The last place to imagine resistance against our Shias is Basra. So I think this all was just manipulation of what happened really in Basra. The people of Basra are giving for years everything they have to rule Iraq, but they are getting nothing back. And everybody thought this would change when Saddam has gone, but now the United States is also trying to use Shia, like the United Kingdom influences Abadi, to exploit the Iraqi people.
Okay, Issa, now we only have about 1 minute left, so I'll be brief. What do you foresee happening in Iraq in the future? Will there be any positive changes or negative changes? I mean, what do you see happening?
The situation in Iraq is very complicated, and we have many factors and dynamics which are playing important roles in all aspects we are discussing, which we don't have all mentioned. My hope is that the corrupt politicians will lose, but we don't know what the United States and Syrian regime of occupied Palestine will do then. We have war in Iraq for approximately 1,500 years. It was always a battlefield, and I don't know if this will change anytime. The possibility of a regime change is existing, but thanks to Allah, there is also the PMU, Hashd al-Shaabi, which will never allow such a stupid movement by the United States private Iraqi army. If Daesh wants to recapture its former Sunni territories, they can try to do so with the United States supplied weapons to SDF. I don't know how else this would work, because according to the United States and Abadi, Daesh is defeated in Iraq and Syria. There are just some little parts where they are still active, but this shouldn't be a big problem to defeat them there too. So I'm optimistic. My viewpoint is that everything will become fine in the future, and the Western and Saudi interventions will all fail.
Okay, Issyan, thank you so much for this very enlightening viewpoint about what's happening on the ground in Basra. I think that this has really been very insightful for all of us, and we learned a lot from your perspective that you share with us today. And now we're going to hear what Mr. Adam Gary has to say. He is the director of Eurasia Future and has written extensively about the unfolding events in Iraq.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Adam, the bedlam in Basra doesn't appear to have been a spontaneous outbreak of unrest, but rather the expression of long-simmering rage by the locals, though some of the crowd dynamics were manipulated by provocateurs to terrorist ends. So, Adam, is this a genuine people's movement or perhaps a color revolution?
Well, it's a bit of both, as unfortunately many of these things are. The obvious thing to say about Iraq is there are very few happy Iraqis. How could there be after decades of first sanctions, then invasion and occupation, then civil strife, then the formation of Daesh, which conquered large parts of northern and central Iraq, and now the putting together of these broken puzzle pieces that we've seen in the attempted general election, the very controversial general election in May of this year. So people are discontented, but there's clearly an external hand that is pointing these protests in Basra in a particular direction. And that hand is clearly an anti-Iranian hand, which goes to the arm of Riyadh, which itself is attached to the mind of the United States. Central to this is the man whose political alliance came first in the May elections, and that's Muqtadir al-Sadr, who's probably most well known to non-Iraqi audiences for leading the so-called Mahdi army against the US and UK troops after 2003. But he is something of a political chameleon. He's someone that's always had vast doctrinal and political disagreements with the leadership of the Islamic Revolution in Tehran. And he's, in the last year, had a very public reconciliation with the Saudi leadership and is unique among Shia clerics in that he said Assad, the president of Syria, must go, which is typically something only said by Western actors and the Sunni Arab world.
Right.
So this, he's a political chameleon, if nothing else.
Okay, well, one of the things I really want to ask you about, Adam, in order to put everything into a larger picture, and especially into the right continuum of time right now, is, you know, the U.S.'s military removal of the Ba'ath Party from power obviously led to an explosion of long-suppressed identity conflicts all throughout Iraq, which suggests, in my view, that a unifying ideology is needed in order to manage these very many fault lines in Iraq. But in the absence of any popular one nowadays, Adam, what solution is left for the country?
Well, in order to understand the solution, one needs to understand how the traditional diagnosis of Iraq's problems has been wrong. Right now in Basra, which is Iraq's second largest city, it's almost completely a Shia Muslim Arab city. You've got one man, al-Sadr, who's backed by the Saudis and by extrapolation, the United States, who's fighting against the popular mobilization units Hadi al-Amiri, another popular politician who's incredibly close to Tehran. And in the middle, both of these factions are pointing the finger at Haidar al-Abadi, the sitting prime minister. All of these men, historic opponents of Saddam when he ruled the Ba'ath Party, and all of them Shia Arab Muslims. So the idea that it's a Shia versus Sunni, Kurd versus Arab struggle in Iraq, and that it's as simple as that, it was never true, and the fault lines of the current political crisis demonstrate that. As for a solution, I think in the long term what would be best would be a union, a political union between Syria and Iraq. Is that realistic? Certainly not in the short term, even though it would solve many crises in terms of resources, sea access, balancing out various sectarian divides, making things more even. But the impetus for that simply and unfortunately isn't there. Ironically, in 1978, it was attempted, but then Saddam, the deputy of the then Iraqi leader, al-Bakr, told his senior to essentially retire or else, and the rest is obviously history. In terms of a more practical solution, Iraq needs a strong leader who can govern a kind of parliament made up of all factions where elements of confrontational democracy are truncated in order to promote a more unifying political program. That too, however, is difficult because since 2003, the very marrow of Iraqi politics has been based on sectarian fighting.
Okay, Adam, well, it sounds like right now, because of all the many fault lines and the lack of these unifying ideologies, as you explained, it looks like Iraq's in the beginning of a new cycle of long-term problems. So that being the case, or at least it certainly seems like it to me and many other observers, what are the geostrategic implications for Iran then? I mean, as Iraq descends deeper into Syrian-like turmoil, and I mean, I get that point from one of your latest articles. I thought it was a very insightful observation that not a lot of people even want to talk about, that Iraq is kind of turning into the new so-called Syria. And Adam, what should the Islamic Republic do in order to mitigate the threat that this dynamic poses and insulate itself from any potential dangers?
The first thing Iran needs to do is tell itself that no good deed goes unpunished. Yes, Iran was indispensable to helping form the PMUs, which helped to militarily defeat Daesh in Iraq. But at the end of the day, as an Arab country where many people, especially among the non-Shia population, have memories of fighting against Iran, of course, Iraq started that war, but it was a struggle for all the soldiers on both sides. Nevertheless, Iran should know that it can't take the Arab world for granted. It can't expect automatic gratitude from the Arab world, even when Iran does something positive like help to defeat the Daesh terror organization, and should look to in the long term and try to prioritize political partnerships based on economic realities rather than based on an ideal of this Islamic resistance which transcends Iranian and ethnic Arab lines. And of course, the countries I'm referring to would be Turkey, Pakistan, and beyond that, China and Russia, already important economic partners of Iran. Iran, in overextending itself, as it clearly has at a time of economic crisis, is finding that not only has it spent a lot of money and time and have had their own men lost in Iraq and Syria, but now the events in Basra, a city that was supposed to be the Iranian stronghold in Iraq, you're seeing a backlash, much of it being manipulated, yes, but when you've got a discontented population, they are going to attack the foreigner first. And in this case, albeit they're legally and in a generally benign fashion, the Iranians are the foreign element.
Okay, Adam, this was very well said on all points, and I certainly learned a lot from your articles on this topic, and especially the insight that you elaborated on in this interview. So thank you again so much for coming on a Trendstorm. This is really such an important topic, and I was honored to have you speak to us about it. So thank you again.
Trendstorm.
Okay, folks, if we think back on what both Isyan and Adam share with us today, we can see that for sure what's happening in Iraq is a hybrid war, but we cannot use that as an excuse for trying to ignore the real problems in Basra and throughout the rest of Iraq. Yes, real problems are there, but no, people should never resort to terrorism. Attacking government buildings and burning foreign consulates is always wrong and always a sign of some provocateur or another, usually foreign, in this case the United States, who may or may not be partially behind this, trying to influence the raging mobs for political purposes. So definitely make sure to draw that distinction. What's happening in Iraq, though, is very severe, and I expect that it's going to continue getting worse in the coming weeks, unfortunately. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@spoonikanews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.